court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
We're back to the grind in the studio.
Yeah, day late and a dollar short.
Seems like we haven't been down here in a while.
We haven't.
We recorded that one before your operation, right?
Yeah.
And then we haven't had one since.
I know. It was like 2 weeks without any. And then you were unavailable and didn't know if we were going to get one done.
So our fans need us to record one.
Yeah, we got to get one done today to get put it out tomorrow, then get another one done the next day to put out for Monday next week.
Get it? Need us? Knee replacement?
That's right. They need us.
Sorry, I just had to go for it.
I'm working my knee back into shape. I'm up walking around, not using a cane or a walker or anything. I'm walking on it.
Well, the rumor is I hear you've been doing some PT.
Oh, lots.
Yeah?
Lots of PT.
I mean, you haven't told me that, but I've heard that from other sources.
You have?
Yeah.
Like what other sources?
That's what Mary told me.
Oh, well, she's not a reliable source. You can't count on that.
Would you say that's hearsay?
It could be. I mean, if you didn't hear it from me, then, you know, it might be hearsay.
Well, it's kind of funny because we're going to do a show about hearsay today.
Oh, I see what you did there. That was real good.
Thanks.
Walked me right into that. I didn't even know what you were doing. I thought you were actually concerned. Thanks for the false concern just setting up your lead-in.
Anything I can do for a bit. No, I am concerned.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit concerned. So, you hear hearsay mentioned all the time when you talk about lawyers and court and courtroom dramas, right?
Yeah, mostly you think of objection, hearsay, sustained.
Yeah, it's like, well, what does that actually mean? Well, hearsay is actually a very complicated legal theory, I guess you might say. It kind of gets glossed over a bit, I think, in these dramas. But the weird thing about hearsay is that there's actually more exceptions to the hearsay rule than there are steadfast rules for the hearsay rule.
That doesn't sound like a winning combination.
Well, it makes it more complicated, which is probably winning for lawyers. So,
I always thought of hearsay as like he said, she said, but I don't think it's the same thing.
Well, the basic theory, I think, behind it is that if you're going to have somebody making a statement, like if I say, for example, like Mary said that Tommy was going to rehab on Thursday. Mary said Tommy is going to physical therapy on Thursday.
You don't know it. I might be in rehab next. And get off the pain pills.
And, you know, you say, well, object to that hearsay because Mary is making that statement about something you said. If you're going to call a witness, why not just call Tommy to the stand? Say, hey, are you going to, did you go to physical therapy on Thursday?
No, so, say, that's a violation of HIPAA. I can't tell you. It's my own personal medical records.
No, you're too clever. But anyway, so basically it's anytime you have somebody else making a statement about something else that somebody else said is kind of your basic understanding of what hearsay is.
That they don't have direct knowledge or they didn't witness it or something.
Well, they could witness it, but they're just, it's kind of like, well, why are you testifying about that when we could have somebody else testify about it?
Oh.
Or they heard somebody else observe something and they said that, so there's different ways. So the actual legal definition is this. Hearsay is a legal term for certain statements that are offered as evidence during trial or hearing for the purpose of attempting to prove the truth of the matter asserted in the statement, but they were not made while testifying at the trial or the hearing itself. So the one key phrase in there you have to kind of focus on is the truth of the matter asserted. T-O-M-A is the moniker that I always used when I was in law school to remember that.
TOMA.
TOMA.
It's not a TOMA.
So one of the examples when I was researching this topic I came across, which was kind of a good one, it says, think of a situation in which a witness wants to offer that a manager of a supermarket was told that there was a banana peel on the floor of the supermarket 20 minutes before a customer slipped on the peel. So, in other words, the witness wants to offer an out-of-court statement, and the statement consists of the words, "There is a banana peel on the floor in aisle 3. So you want to determine why is that statement being offered. If the statement is being offered not to prove that the peel was actually on the ground, because that's not an issue, as both parties will likely admit that there was a banana peel on the ground, but rather it's being offered to prove that the manager was put on notice that the peel was on the ground. So the issue, in fact, is whether or not the manager had noticed that the banana peel was there, and therefore the store might be liable because they should have known or should have done something to take the precautions to remove the banana peel from the floor.
Or he should have at least lodged an appeal.
That comes later. He might object to that under the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine. I don't know.
That's right.
But no, so you see the difference there? The statement's not to prove that the banana was on the floor. It was to prove whether or not the statement was made to the manager.
Yes. So who was the person that told this to the manager, and let's have them testify that they told the manager this.
Right. And
as opposed to somebody saying they heard the manager was told about it 20 minutes earlier.
Exactly. And also, they're not trying to prove the truth of the matter asserted. They're not trying to prove there's a banana on the floor, because this person actually didn't observe the banana peel on the floor. They just observed the manager being told that there was a banana peel on the floor. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to say this shows there's a banana on the floor. This shows that there was noticed that there was a banana on the floor, if that makes sense. And it can kind of get very tricky, because the real thing you want to try to do sometimes, if you're being clever, is you want to get in hearsay statements, but you want to offer them for different reasons, but the jury still hears it. If you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So
I hear what you're saying.
So basically you can offer something, say, well, I'm offering it not for the truth of the matter asserted, because you're saying something else, but you're still getting that statement in front of the jury. So you're kind of getting that in there. So,
you know, something else that's confusing.
What's that?
Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. Do you have bananas or not? Yes, we have no bananas. Why would you say it that way? That's confusing. That's just leading to confusion.
Well, it's you ask the question improperly.
Do you have bananas? Yes, we have no bananas. Who would answer that?
Do you have no bananas?
I would like to strike the yes.
Do you have no bananas?
I have no bananas.
Okay.
Yes, I have no bananas. What? Yes, do you or no, don't you?
I'm just happy to see you.
Who
Tommy?
Wrote that song?
I'm just happy to see you.
Well, if you keep going like that, you're going to need to split.
Now, the rules of evidence, Rule 802 is basically where hearsay is talked about. And basically it says that hearsay is inadmissible. But then you go on to Rule 803, and you see that's where all the exceptions are to the hearsay rule. And there's more exceptions than you might think.
Yeah, there's like 20 pages of exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, because we did a little bit of research for this. You were kind of surprised, weren't you?
Yeah, I thought my printer screwed up or something. I thought I was printing out a couple pages and the thing just kept going.
Well, that's one thing. When you take evidence class in law school and you get to talking about hearsay, you think, oh, okay, hearsay. Then you spend weeks and weeks learning about the different exceptions to hearsay. And it's like, wait a second.
Everything's an exception.
Yeah. And they're contained basically in Rule 803. And so what I want to do is kind of go through some of these different exceptions.
Some of them are very uniquely named.
They are.
Like excited utterance.
Whoa now. Hey, calm down. We're going to get to that one.
That sounds like utter nonsense.
So the first one you come to is what's called present sense impression.
Okay.
And basically, the rule is that statements describing or explaining an event or condition made while the declarant was perceiving the event or condition or immediately thereafter are not considered hearsay.
So, like, if somebody was like, golly, did you see that? Then that's admissible?
Well, that'd be an excited utterance, probably. Oh. But no. No. For example, like...
I was pretty excited.
You were. With the whole golly. So example, like if Joe and Jim were on the highway and Joe said, wow, did you see how fast that blue car is speeding? I bet he'll crash. So Jim can testify about what he said, because it's kind of a statement based upon
his observation.
And it was offered immediately after the observation. And the reason behind that, and all these have different kind of legitimate reasons why they're exceptions, is because if you make a statement like that immediately after seeing it, it's probably its veracity is probably complete.
Because you didn't really take time to think out or have any motive to say it. It just came out.
No, that's again, that's back to excited utterance. Oh. This is
I must like that one.
You do. You're an excitable boy.
Excitable boy.
So basically what this means is that things that people see and they talk about immediately thereafter are usually pretty reliable because you don't have time to kind of change the story, change the narrative. So if you say, did you see how fast that blue car is speeding? And you say it right afterwards, that gives you time. Somebody says, like, yeah, he said the blue car was speeding. If you say something maybe a day later, hey, remember when we were in the car and I saw that red car speeding? You know, your memory may have slipped a little bit, but when you say it right then, it's right after it happened. So it's probably pretty accurate. So,
and then when you start taking bets on whether the guy's going to crash or not, huh?
That's right. I got a cool 20. He's going to go over the side of the hill.
I see those kind all the time. And I look and say, that guy's on drugs. They need to pull him over. He's on drugs.
I say that daily.
You see him all around.
Yeah. Okay. Now on to the next one. Excited utterance.
Woohoo! That's my favorite. Is that an excited utterance?
Yeah, kind of. So statements that are made that are related to a startling event or condition made while the declarant was under the stress of excitement or caused by the event or condition is not considered hearsay. So an example of this would be if two people walk out of a movie theater and see a man with a gun and the woman says, look out, he's pointing a gun at us. Robert can testify about what she said.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. So otherwise,
did you see the gun? No, but she said, Robert's, look out, he's pointing a gun at us.
Yeah. And otherwise, if it wasn't an excited utterance, you could say, well, why don't you just have her testify? She's the one that said that.
Well, she's the one that got shot.
Maybe so. So yeah, that's an excited utterance, and that's always a fun one, and it appears a lot on different law school exams. You can always tell an excited utterance because it's followed by a question mark, or not a question mark, an exclamation mark.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. That'd be an excited question.
Yeah.
What? You did what?
I got to tell you, I'm having way more fun discussing hearsay on the podcast than I did in law school. So there's a bunch more, but I think before we get on to the rest of them, we want to jump into maybe a possible motion pending before the court.
Oh, well, yes. If it please your hearsayness, we would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
Somebody told me that it would please me to pay for court costs.
Well, we're here for your pleasure.
That's what somebody told me. That's what I heard.
Well, don't just take that as hearsay because they might have said it in an excited manner. We're here to please you, Your Honor.
Who do we have on the docket?
We have Sleep Number.
Sleep Number. So maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed, but thought you couldn't afford one. But can you really afford another night's restless sleep?
I don't think you can, and there's never been a better time to come to a Sleep Number store where all beds are on sale during the biggest sale of the year.
That's not hearsay. It is the biggest sale of the year.
It's a fact. Stone cold.
Now, the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose the comfort and support that's right for you. It adjusts on each side, so it's the perfect bed for couples.
You can actually feel how it contours to your neck, shoulders, back, and hips for more proper spinal alignment.
And that's important.
Absolutely. No one wants a crooked spine.
The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Beds are effortlessly comfortable.
Effortlessly.
That's right. Effortlessly is how we said that word as well.
That's right.
They sense your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping blissfully through the night. Does your bed do that?
No, I have not been sleeping blissfully.
I bet not.
No, with my leg the way it is, it makes it hard.
Yeah?
So there's no bliss in my sleep.
Maybe you need a Sleep Number bed.
I would say that I absolutely do. Maybe it adjusts to knee replacements.
Is there a setting for that?
Yeah, instead of lining my spine, fix my knee.
Come in right now during the biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Plus, save 50% on the new Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed now through Labor Day.
You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. There are more than 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide, so just visit sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you.
And have a good night's sleep. You deserve it.
That's right. Effortlessly.
So, on to more exceptions to the hearsay rule. This one is called then existing mental, emotional, or physical condition.
Oh my God, these titles could only have been thought up by a lawyer.
So, statements which are made of the declarant's then existing state of mind, emotion, or sensation, or physical condition are not considered hearsay. Does that make sense?
No, I have no idea what you're saying.
Well, imagine this.
I'm imagining.
So, Barbara tells her neighbor that she was going crazy and couldn't eat since her ex-boyfriend had been following her home for 3 weeks. Hmm. Barbara's neighbor can testify about what Barbara said because she is talking about her then-existing mental state and actually physical state as well. She hasn't eaten in 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, she may not have seen this boyfriend following her, and she's not testifying to the fact that he's following her. She's testifying to the fact that Barbara said this.
Right.
She was under some type of duress from it.
Right. So the cross-examination, say Barbara's neighbor is Gene. So we have Gene on the stand, and I say, Gene, did you see Barbara's ex-boyfriend following her? No, I didn't. Well, did Barbara tell you anything? Objection. It's going to be hearsay. Well, no, Judge, it's not, because it's going to be a present sense, or no, it's going to be a then-existing mental, emotional, or physical condition. And so I'd go on to proffer that testimony that basically Barbara said to the neighbor that the ex was going crazy. It was driving her crazy because he was following her for 3 weeks. And so the judge would hear my argument as to why it wasn't hearsay and say, my, Mr. Meadows, what a brilliant legal argument you have made to overcome that hearsay objection. Overruled.
And Gene would say, yes, and his following her was making me blue.
What?
She was a blue G.
Okay. So, but does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And so the reason being, again, if you look at the reason why you have these different exceptions.
So it has validity, even though she's not testifying that he was following her. He could say her mental state was such, and she said this was why. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I can tell you she was flustered.
Yeah, and that's exactly why that leaves it up to the jury. It should be in front of the jury. We think this kind of statement probably has some sort of truthiness to it. Because
Truthiness?
Because why would somebody say that unless that was actually true? And it's not like they were setting up this for some sort of big court case. They were just making a comment to their neighbor about what was going on. So,
okay.
Makes sense?
I follow you.
All right. The next one. Statements made for the purpose of medical diagnosis or treatment. And I have a little asterisk here where Tommy's going to make some sort of insane HIPAA quote about this.
You can't talk about other people's medical stuff.
Statements made to medical professionals to receive medical diagnosis or treatment are not considered hearsay. Now, I guess they could be objectionable for other reasons.
Well, yeah, but I guess it depends. If there was a crime that was committed or somebody is possibly a danger to others or something like that, then that kind of thing could be admitted.
Yeah. And so here's an example. If George goes to the doctor talking about knee pain on December 20th, 2009, and then on January 2nd, 2011, George is in a car accident and he claims that his knee injury stems from the car accident and he wants the other driver to be held accountable for it. George's doctor could testify that George saw him for knee pain prior to the car accident.
I don't think that he could anymore.
Well,
I think HIPAA would override that.
There could be other objections, but basically it would probably come in actually, because that would be something that would be disclosed to the court during discovery. So oftentimes you would say, have you ever been treated for knee pain prior? And
no, and I won't release my records.
Yeah. You can't prove it. Nah, 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 boo, boo. Stick your head in doo-doo.
Right.
No. So basically,
personal records.
What would happen is you would call, you would be able to find out that maybe that this doctor did treat George before, and you could put him on the stand or take his deposition to find out if he in fact did treat him for that. So you can get a subpoena to get that kind of information. So,
well, all right then.
And actually, basically, if he didn't treat him for knee pain, but he made some sort of statement, basically that, oh yeah, my knee really hurts. Can you take a look at it? And maybe he was in there for some other reason. And the doctor happens to remember that. He can testify about that too, because it's something that was led to the purpose of medical diagnosis or treatment. So
you better watch out when you're trying to get HIPAA-fied.
That's right. So, I mean, and the reason, again, for this is people generally don't lie about what things they're saying to the doctor to get medical treatment. They're trying
unless they're drug seekers.
That's true, unless they're drug seekers.
Then they do. Yeah. I hear stories about that from my relatives that are doctors.
Yeah, it makes me blue.
That's right, just like Gene.
So the next one is recorded recollection.
Recorded recollection.
And so a memo or record concerning the matter about which a witness once had knowledge but now has forgotten is admissible and not considered hearsay. So, for example, if somebody witnessed a fight between two students and he saw, say, Clark punch Dave in the stomach, and after breaking up the fight, this guy wrote down notes about what he saw during the fight and then for some reason filed them away, the information contained in those notes would not be considered hearsay.
Hmm. All right. Well, I guess not if he wrote it down right at the time or if he recorded himself. I am deposing myself. I observed a fight today, and I want to leave my thoughts behind on this tape should it ever come to a court matter.
Because I saw him punch him in the stomach very sternly.
It did not look fun.
Who writes stuff like that down?
I don't know.
Dear diary,
that was today. It's like when I got called to witness when a guy sucker punched another guy during a pickup basketball game. And I didn't think anything was going to come out of that.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the guy that got sucker punched sued the other guy. And ended up in magistrate court, and they called me as a witness.
What'd you say?
Well, I just said, yeah, he hit him. And here's kind of the way it went. The magistrate said, well, would you say that it's the basketball there at the Y can get rough sometimes? I said, oh, yeah. He said, have you ever seen anybody get hit before? And I said, yeah. Yeah, a lot of times people have been hit. And he goes, yeah, that's just roughhouse basketball. There's nothing to that. Case dismissed.
This was here in Cabell County?
Yeah.
How long ago was this?
Maybe about 8 or 9 years ago.
Who was the magistrate?
I don't remember. I want to say Rice.
Oh.
But I couldn't swear to that.
There is a magistrate named Rice.
Yeah. I was a real old guy.
Yeah.
Real old heavyset guy.
Yeah. Johnny Ray Rice.
I think he was in a wheelchair.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what I will say. So, I mean, he basically just dismissed the whole thing. Said it was just roughhouse basketball. He sucker punched the guy. I mean, somebody made a basket, and while they were running back down the court, he kind of stopped there at half court till the guy went running by and just sucker punched him. He never saw it coming.
Was it a criminal trial?
I think that, yeah, they were going for assault.
Wow.
I mean, that's what he filed assault charges against him, and I'm not sure which it was because he was also wanting to recover medical costs, too.
Yeah.
So he had to go to the hospital. It busted his chin open or his eye or something like that.
That's not cool.
No.
That doesn't sound like roughhouse basketball to me.
That's a little bit beyond roughhouse basketball. I've been in roughhouse basketball, and I've got scars to prove it, but it wasn't from getting sucker punched. It was from catching an elbow or getting hit in the mouth and driving my tooth through my lip or splitting my elbow open or something like that.
I only punched somebody one time in anger on the soccer field.
Yeah.
I was a goalkeeper, and I came out on a breakaway and got this ball. And I got the ball probably a good 1.5 seconds before the forward came in, but he came sliding into me nonetheless. And he was known to be a dirty player, and he had fouled some other players earlier in the game pretty hard. And he raked his cleats right up the inside of my thigh. Mm. And I don't think it caused it to blood, but it hurt. And so I stood up, and he stood up, and he kind of snickered like, like, you know, one of those snidely whiplash type things. And he turned to jog away. And I just saw red, and I did, you know how they say like a crow hop whenever you're getting ready to throw a ball in from the, yeah. I did like a crow hop, and I had the soccer ball in my left hand, and I drew back my right hand and just smashed him in the back of the head as hard as I could. And, his head went flying forward. He didn't fall down, but he turned around. And he's like, ah, and, strangely enough, no referee saw it. No one saw it. There was one person that saw it. My dad. He was in the stands, and I still remember him yelling, Michael Abraham! And I was scared to death. I was 17 years old at the time. But nobody saw it, the guy just kept on running, and I guess he didn't come back into the penalty box again.
Well,
really?
We showed him. Yeah, well, I don't know. I never had good experiences at soccer matches. I got thrown out of a city because of a soccer match and wasn't allowed to go back. So,
what city was that?
Winfield.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, don't ever come back to Winfield, Smurl.
They've got warrants waiting for me if I go back. I have to just dash by on the interstate.
Whose game was that?
Sydney's. That was when she was a freshman on the soccer team.
Oh, that's so funny. So another exception to the hearsay rule, and I believe the statute of limitations is run for that assault on the soccer field. Plus, I was a minor, too, so I think I'm good.
You were a minor? You've never been down in the mines before.
Records of regularly conducted material. So records, reports, and data that are created with information from a person with knowledge are admissible as long as the business can show that it makes a regular practice of keeping such records.
Like meetings or minutes or something like that?
Yeah. So, for example, if cashiers are required to fill out a form stating how much cash was in the register when their shift began and the amount of cash in the register at the end of the shift, those reports would not be considered hearsay. They would just be like, oh, this is what we regularly do this, not hearsay. Mm-hmm. And again, you can kind of see why this would be considered not hearsay, right?
Sure.
If you do it on a daily basis, why would anybody lie about that? Why would they fabricate things like that?
Right.
It's because it's, you know, on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Now, likewise, here's the flip side to that. If a business usually does that, and then for some reason that record is not there, then that would be admissible too.
So it's like, on the day in question, you kept no record. What is the purpose of that?
Exactly.
Can you explain the discrepancy?
Yeah.
I think not.
Now, you think about that. That's probably got a lot of probative value to it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Probative.
So, public records, anything in vital statistics like birth records, mm-hmm. Death records, marriage certificates, things like that.
Tax records.
Those are not going to be considered hearsay because why would they be? They're
a matter of public record. They're in the court.
That's
right. The court's got it. It must be right.
Different records of religious organization concerning family history or things like that. Like maybe if... you're trying to set up an alibi, and for whatever reason, there's some sort of record about when a child was baptized or christened or something like that, and they had the whole family there. That wouldn't be considered hearsay. It could come in because, you know, why would somebody fabricate that or lie about that unless they were really trying to set up the perfect alibi?
Mm-hmm.
Here's one of my favorites. Learned treatises.
Learned treatises.
That's right. So if you have an expert witness and they're going to talk about information that is found in different periodicals or treatises or things like that, and they're widely known in that particular field, it's not considered hearsay when they talk about that learned treatise. So, for example, if someone who's a fingerprint analyst talks about a book and they quote a few lines from an article in a journal that's basically widely read and respected in law enforcement, and it shows the methods that they use to analyze the prints, the lines that they quote from that article are not considered hearsay. So that can come in because they're basically saying, well, I followed Smith's fingerprint manual on page 16 where it says, get the fingerprint and then look at it.
I followed Mad Magazine and it said Alfred E. Newman for was the one to do it.
Alfred E. Newman for president. Exactly. So, I mean, that makes sense too. I mean,
yeah.
A learned treatise, you should be able to quote from that and talk about it.
If you can't quote from a learned treatise, who can you quote from?
That's right. One of my favorite judges, his name was Learned Hand. Did we talk about
Learned Hand?
Did we talk about Learned Hand ever yet?
No.
Yeah.
Learned Hand.
He's a famous judge, and that was his name.
Well, you know, there's some study that says that your name helps dictate what you do later in life.
Really?
And there's some good names that match up with people that things like that.
Hmm.
You know, like someone named Toothman that becomes a dentist or something like that. And, you know, those kind of things.
I do a lot of shoveling in the meadows.
Do you?
Yeah. I dig stuff up.
Hmm.
I dig holes and fill them back up. Metaphorically.
That's just crazy. That speaks as to your mental state. It's not hearsay.
Another one is reputation as to character. Reputation of a person's character among associates or the community is not considered hearsay. So basically...
I mean, somebody could just say he's a fine, upstanding citizen. I saw he was on the Huntington Wall of Fame or something like that.
Yeah. You could say that basically if somebody's a really good employee somewhere and that basically they received the most honest employee 2 years in a row, an employee who's heard this about that employee may testify about his reputation for honesty. And that's not considered hearsay. It's like, well, do you know...
How much did he pay for that award?
It's like, well, do you know about Dwight at Tri Data? Like, oh yeah, I hear he's won Employee of the Year 3 years running. He's a good employee. Then that would be not considered hearsay because I'm talking about that.
Okay.
A judgment of a previous conviction can come in. So basically, if somebody's been convicted of something, that comes in. That's not considered hearsay.
No, but you have to prove relevance, don't you, to usually admit that? Because just because somebody had committed a criminal act before doesn't necessarily mean that that's reason why you should believe they're guilty now.
Oh, yeah. And again, all these things that I'm talking about, all these hearsay exceptions, this just gets them in through the hearsay argument. There might be another exception. I mentioned a second ago probative value. So say that this case turns about an auto accident and you want to introduce this guy's prior conviction, and it has nothing to do. It's a misdemeanor conviction.
For stealing bubblegum.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, well, I mean, it's theft. So that could come in possibly as impeachment. But for example, say it's something like speeding, and you want to put this guy's a known speeder. He likes to speed on the highway. But it has really nothing to do with the case.
He was in that blue car in the first one.
That's right.
He's going to crash.
He almost hit Gene. But it doesn't have any probative value to the case. And by probative, I mean it really means nothing. Why would you even put that in? Anything that you learn from that is outweighed by the prejudice you're going to put in the jury about that. So there'd be no reason to put that in. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So just because it comes in maybe under hearsay doesn't mean it gets objected out on something else. So it's important to understand that.
Is it true you've been convicted of other crimes? Objection, Your Honor. Relevance. Sustained.
Okay, I'll move on then. So, statements in ancient documents. This is what I thought was kind of interesting. Any statement that's made in a document that was prepared before January 1st, 1998, and whose authenticity is established. So, That was the current date. So, basically, that would come in as not hearsay because you've already established the authenticity, and it's an old document, so it can come in.
So, like, we could use the Bible to convict Judas.
I think so.
That's an ancient document.
What are we going to convict him of?
Treason.
Treason?
Yes. He betrayed Jesus.
He did. Did he have some sort of fiduciary duty to Jesus?
No. I don't know.
No. You're just like, no. That's it. No.
He took care of the money? Is that fiduciary means he takes care of the money?
I don't know.
I was just trying to think of a historical document.
A historical document?
Yeah.
Let's see. What would be a historical document?
I mean, where you could use something like that. I mean, unless you say, yes, my relatives came over on the Mayflower. It's on the Magna Carta or something. I don't know.
Well, what about... I was thinking about...
Manifest Destiny.
I was thinking about if... we could convict that guy of shooting a Roland the Thompson gunner.
Yeah. Roland the Headless Thompson gunner.
But that's not really an ancient document.
That's a record by Warren Zevon.
That's an ancient song.
He drank himself to death drinking fists of vodka daily.
That's the rumor. I think he ended up actually with cancer and died.
Well, I know he was a far out dude.
He was. He actually had some very insightful quote on his last appearance on David Letterman, because he was always on David Letterman, and he said, "You have anything else you want to say?" And he said, "Enjoy every sandwich."
There you go.
It's a pretty profound statement.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. The crap has hit the fan.
It has. So that was basically Rule 803. I think I hit most of the high points of it.
You hit the first three pages. There's still another 23 pages, I think, of exceptions, but they just go into more and more very specific type situations.
Well, are there any specific ones you came across that you wanted to touch on? I know you did some research about this.
I think you covered all the way back to any of the things that I would I got to, because I quit when I saw that many pages. I quit.
Now there are some more exceptions covered in like Rule 804, and that's basically if a declarant is unavailable as a witness. So basically, when you say declarant, this is going to be somebody who made the statement. So a declarant is a person who makes the statement. And if they are unavailable, then somebody else can come in and testify.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's also my understanding on the hearsay rule that it's tied very closely to the confrontation clause of the U.S. Constitution.
It can be, yeah.
Because it's basically, it tramples on your right to face your accuser when hearsay is admitted, because you're saying something as a fact that somebody else said, but you're not able to question that somebody else that said it.
Exactly. That's why it can be a very useful tool if you can argue to get some sort of statement in that you're not making it for the truth of the matter asserted. Wink, wink, but you kind of are.
Yeah, because you can't cross-examine the person who supposedly said it.
Exactly. What I was going to say about the declarant being unavailable, I mean, that's basically one of the main ones, because you're having somebody else testify when the other person can't testify for some reason.
And that's what led me to think about that, about the confront your accuser.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the criteria for having somebody testify when somebody's unavailable is if they're exempted from testifying because of certain rules, because of some sort of privilege.
Or like spousal privilege?
Spousal privilege or attorney-client privilege.
Or evidently doctor privilege is right out the window, because we're going to talk about your medical problems.
That's right. They don't remember what actually took place.
That's why I write post-its all the time.
They can't testify because of death or some sort of physical infirmity or illness, and they can't come there. They're absent from the trial or hearing because they've not been able to bring them. Because maybe, you know, they know they're out there.
I don't want to go. Exactly. I don't like courtrooms. I don't want to go. You can't make me.
But yeah, that's one of the main reasons why you might have somebody who's not available come in. Now, there are, again, like there are some exceptions to it, like there always are.
Again.
So the following are not excluded by the rule against hearsay if the declarant is unavailable as a witness. So if there's former testimony, and this is testimony that was given as a witness at a trial, hearing, or other lawful deposition, whether given during the current proceeding or a different one, and is now offered against a party who had, or in a civil case whose predecessor in interest had, an opportunity or similar motive to develop it by direct, cross, or redirect examination. So, if you had a chance to cross-examine them, even in the former testimony, it can still come in. So, this is one of the main reasons why, when you have cases, you want to take depositions. And you want to try to take them early in the case if you can, because if you wait 3 or 4 years down the road, that person may be gone. If you do it right away, you get that deposition testimony in there, and then 3 or 4 years later down the road, they're gone. You can get that in. Because they're unavailable, you can actually have it read in. You can actually play the part and read the depo.
If you're dead, are you considered unavailable?
Yes, you are 100%.
Is that an excuse?
It is.
You get a note from your coroner?
He's officially... not just slightly, but completely dead. Something else can be made if there's a statement made upon belief of imminent death. So basically in a prosecution for homicide, a statement that the declarant made believing that their death was imminent and they made about certain circumstances or the cause of it, they can bring that in too. So like if somebody's like...
they're on their deathbed. They say, Mike did it!
Yeah, they're laying there like, Tommy poisoned me. It was... the soap. It was Life Boy. Wasn't that the soap in the Christmas story?
I think so.
Yeah. So that would come in.
Yeah.
So also statements against interest. So basically if you make a statement against your own interest that you wouldn't want to say, that will come in. Basically it's not hearsay. That's
because why would you say something that would be against your own interest?
Exactly.
So therefore it adds veracity to it.
Here's a kind of a obscure one. A statement of a person's family history. So basically, if a declarant talks about their own birth, adoption, legitimacy, ancestry, marriage, divorce, relationship by blood, adoption, marriage, or other similar facts of personal history, that can come in. And I guess it's because you wouldn't talk about things like that unless you're probably telling the truth.
Well, I guess they can be verified.
Yeah. So, though it could be verified, but if it's unverifiable, and you need to bring that in for some reason to show, like, you know, isn't it true that this isn't really the son of so-and-so? And he's like, well, we don't have any really record to show that. Well, he said he wasn't on this date, so that might come in.
Hmm.
So, but in this day and age, I mean, we have genetic testing and things like that, so.
So, it's kind of outdated, huh?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Thanks, science.
Thanks, science. Took all the guesswork out of it.
And then we have Rule 807. Under the Federal Rules of Evidence, and this is the catch-all. and says, in general, under the following circumstances, a hearsay statement is not excluded by the rule against hearsay, even if the statement is not specifically covered by a hearsay exception in Rule 803 or 804, and the statement has an equivalent circumstantial guarantees of trustworthiness, it is offered as evidence of a material fact, it is more probative on the point for which it is offered than any other evidence that the proponent can obtain through reasonable efforts, admitting it will best serve the purposes of these rules and the interests of justice. So there's the.
So you just did away with the whole hearsay rule. Basically, it's a judgment call by the judge.
You can, yeah, you can argue that.
He can just say, rule whichever way he wants. Say, that's what I thought.
Exactly. To a certain degree, yeah.
Well, if you can't find an exception under those multiple pages under 803 and 804, then, you know, there's something wrong.
So when you hear this hearsay objection on TV and there's no response to it, chances are it's not a real show because there's probably some response you can make to it.
There's a lot of responses to make to it. And, under what? Then you have to point to where you're allowing it from.
And when you're prepping for trial and you know basically what you're trying to elicit certain testimony from certain people, or if you know the other side is going to elicit testimony from somebody on one of these, then you essentially plan out what your objection is going to be. And if they're going to make that objection, you plan out what you're going to say in response to it. Mm-hmm. And that's why you get into trial prep time that takes a lot of time, because you have to plan all this out.
Right.
You don't want to go in there all willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly never wins a day.
No, it does not. So you want to be very, very prepared. And usually the most prepared lawyer is the one that usually wins.
Well, that's the way it is in a lot of facets of life.
Isn't it?
Yeah. The most prepared wins the day.
So, but you have some more stuff here about the history of hearsay. Is that correct?
Well, you know, all these things are usually founded in some event that happened somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these things that come about as they come about. So I was looking up some of the history of it, trying to figure out where this came into. And it says the Confrontation Clause, which this is tied to, has its roots in both English common law and Roman law. In noting the right's long history, the United States Supreme Court has cited Acts of the Apostle, I guess this is chapter 25, verse 16, which reports the Roman governor Porcius Festus discussing the proper treatment of his prisoner Paul. It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man up to die before the accused has met his accusers face to face and has been given a chance to defend himself against the charges. It is also cited to Shakespeare's Richard II, when Richard, who set himself up as judge and jury over dispute, says, "Then call them to our presence, fact to face, and frowning brow to brow, ourselves will hear the accuser and the accused freely speak." So now the real history of the hearsay rule is not quite so ancient. Writing in a Harvard Law Review
or so ornate,
yeah, it's not so well written. Although they did write, even in the early 1900s, they wrote very well. Writing in a Harvard Law Review article published in May 1904, J.H. Wigmore wrote, "The history of the hearsay rule as a distinct and living idea began only in the 1500s, and it did not gain complete development and final precision until the early 1700s. Beginning in the later 1400s, the development of the jury trial, with witnesses testifying about the facts of a particular case, was an important factor in the development of the hearsay rule. Interesting, it appears that prior to later 1400 juries conducted their own investigations in civil cases. So toward the end of the Middle Ages, the function of the jury transformed from persons who were active investigators that had knowledge of the case to our present-day juries who are passive triers of fact with no prior knowledge of the case presented. By the 1500s, testimony of witnesses in open court was becoming the main, though not exclusive, source of proof. During this time, statements were received in evidence, but the reliability of hearsay statements was beginning to be questioned as a tale of a tale and a story out of another man's mouth. In the trial of Sir Walter Raleigh for treason in 1603, the primary evidence against him was a sworn confession of Lord Cobham, Raleigh's alleged co-conspirator. Raleigh alleged that Cobham had recanted. Raleigh objected to the admission of this hearsay statement and demanded that Cobham, who was being held in the Tower of London, where the trial was being held, be brought to court to testify. Raleigh's objection was ignored, and he was convicted and later executed. His conviction and execution may have helped fuel outcry against the reliance on hearsay in criminal prosecutions. During this period, use of witness hearsay statements, both oral and written, including sworn statements, as was the custom in civil law systems, was becoming increasingly criticized, and the reliability of such statement was increasingly questioned. One factor that may also have played a role in the development of the hearsay rule was a failure of the English system to develop a system of proof comparable to the two witness rule found in civil and canon law systems.
Mm-hmm.
So we've discussed that before about how a lot of them say you have to have two witnesses say the same thing.
Right.
But that's the history points to that becoming a point of law, the hearsay rule, the execution of Sir Walter Raleigh.
Well, it's funny you talk about Wigmore. He was like one of the, I guess he is the guy about evidence and also the hearsay rule. There's a book called Wigmore on Evidence.
Wigmore on Evidence?
That's right.
Don't wig out? Is that where that came from?
Don't wig out. It's not getting into evidence. Yeah, the hearsay rule, I think, is pretty interesting. And it's really a more intellectually stimulating area where you can kind of think about how to try to craft your arguments to get different statements in if they're going to be kind of questionable.
Kind of be crafty, eh?
That's right. Also, again, like I said, if you can get a statement in, even though it may be hearsay, but it's not for the truth of the matter asserted, use those magic words and the judge agrees with you, it's always nice because it's like, oh, yeah, that's going to sting.
Got that one in there.
So, but that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where I ask Tommy if he remembers different legal theories and questions we talked about. And the first one is an acronym, TOMA, and I just said it.
That of matter at hand, or something like that. TOMA, truth of matter advice.
Truth of the matter asserted.
Truth of matter asserted, that's it.
That's right. And so that's one of the definition of hearsay is basically a statement offered into evidence during trial or hearing for the purpose of attempting to prove the truth of the matter asserted in the statements, and they were not made while testifying at trial or hearing itself. So that's the linchpin of the entire hearsay thing. It's you're proving the truth of the matter asserted.
The linchpin.
That's right. Now, true or false?
True.
Hearsay is never always admissible.
Yes, we have no bananas. Hearsay is never always admissible.
Hearsay
is sometimes admissible if it meets one of the exceptions.
That's right. And there's a lot of them, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of them. But see, you worded that just like the yes, we have no bananas.
I know. It's called a callback.
A callback?
Yeah.
I thought that was a hollaback girl.
Ain't no hollaback girl.
Ain't no hollaback girl.
B-A-N-N-N banana or something. I can't spell
banana. Spell bananas.
I have no banana spelling. Yes, I have no banana 30, spelling.
30,000 pounds of bananas.
So what is considered an ancient document?
An ancient document? The Bible.
That is considered an ancient document.
Anything before 1898 or something like that.
Well, one rule I saw said 1998.
Oh, 1998.
Yeah, so anything.
I thought you said that, but I thought, nah, it's not old enough. It must be in 1898.
Yeah, 1998 was a long time ago.
Well, no, not really. I was old even then.
I was just a young pup.
I wasn't.
I was actually not even a lawyer then. I was getting ready to start law school, but... So
I was already on my downhill decline from my first career. Ready to start my second.
This is an open essay legal brief question.
Uh-oh, I've never had one of those, have
I? I know, it's different.
Uh-oh.
What is your favorite hearsay exception, and can you explain it?
An excited utterance! What could be better? Golly, did you see the size of that thing? Shazam!
I'm not surprised that's your favorite. So basically any statement that's made regarding to a startling event or condition made while the declarant was under the stress of the excitement or caused by the event or condition is not hearsay and therefore admissible.
We got to get out of here.
Yeah. So
he doesn't look like he's got good intent with that thing.
So for
whatever
example,
that thing is.
So an example of that might be if you were at the YMCA playing basketball and you saw that guy punch that guy and you said, holy smokes, he just punched him right in the kisser.
Holy sucker punch, Batman.
Yeah, but then you weren't available to testify, And somebody says, well, did you hear what Tommy Smurl said? Yeah, I heard what Tommy Smurl. What'd he say? I don't know, but it was exciting. It was an utterance.
It was an excited utterance that I heard.
Yeah, so that would come in because it'd be an excited utterance. So.
Hit him again for me.
Yeah. Knock him one in the kisser.
Knock him out, John.
Knock him back into the Stone Age. Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Queens of the Stone Age?
That's right. Foo Fighters.
What?
Yep.
Foo Fighters?
Foo Fighters.
They've been fighting foo for over a decade.
So that's hearsay. What do you think about hearsay?
Well, I say if you can't believe everything you hear and only half of what you see.
Okay.
That's hearsay.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.